Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We're here in the KHOI studios. We're here in the Donalana Kitchen. Thanks for joining us today. Today on the show, we'll talk about seasonable sort of things.
Like we always do. Seasoning, seasonable.
And seasonish. Yes, yes, we have apples coming up, and we've got crockpot ideas, stuff to eat this time of year. And we're going to visit the local foods potluck that was held here in Ames. This is an great time of year to celebrate the harvest.
Sweater weather.
Yes. This wonderful KHOI is put together all by volunteers. Yes, we are. This is community radio, and the Donalana Kitchen is happy to be part of it. We get support from a lot of nice folks.
Yes, support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames, community-owned, community-focused since 1974, open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
Well, I had a nice little adventure last night, a food adventure last night. I went to the Mucky Duck, a fine local establishment, and partook of some fish and chips. One gets a little hungry for that sort of thing every now and then, and so I had some. It was good, and I like their
It's considered ethnic food in Ames, British stuff.
This British stuff. And thanks to Marcus Johnson, who is a fine publican out there in his pub, teaching us how to have a good time and enjoy each other's company out there. It's not just a bar, folks. It is a pub, which means sociability is a good, good, good part of it. So I went for some very sociable fish and chips and had a fine draft speckled hen. They have lots of beers out there. Speckled hen is a really nice English dark ale, I believe. It's kind of a nice thing to have late in the evening.
And what's that egg rolled in sausage called?
That egg rolled in sausage that they have on the menu out there is called a Scotch egg. And that's good because they have good mustard to go with it. I enjoy that.
It's your very British food.
It is.
And we're lucky to have them here in town. Give us a bit of alternatives to the American standard diet.
It is. They even have pickled eggs in a jar on the counter so you can partake.
Yeah, and they have, what's that really treacly dessert? What's that stuff called? Something very sweet.
A treacle.
A treacle? It's called treacle.
I don't know. Well, we will have to get Marcus Johnson on the...
Oh, what a good idea.
On the radio sometime, and he can fill us in on all of this stuff. So I happen to be there on Monday evening. Monday evening is pub quiz night, and it is a wonderful little quiz put together. Everybody participated. It was real fun. Everybody was talking to each other. We were sharing ideas between tables and trying not to look over each other's shoulder. It was good. We had a good time at the British pub quiz night on Monday. And here's a little something I noticed on what was advertised out there. Thursday nights there, they have cask beer night, which is cask-conditioned beer, unfiltered, unpasteurized, and served slightly warm. That happens every Thursday at the Mucky Duck.
A different cask. For you beer aficionados.
Right. Featuring Midwestern breweries that are doing this sort of thing, kind of a special little beery thing. One cask only is tapped on Thursdays. So that'd be an interesting thing to try out sometime.
Yeah, they're out past Lowe's or something, way out Duff or something?
Go south on Duff. It's on the left. They've got a fancy sign now. They've got lights. It used to be a gas station, but it has grown into a fine little pub. And they just celebrated their second anniversary last week. Yes. So What about apples, Donna?
Well, a few weeks ago, Lana mentioned this book she had gotten at the library, Apples of Uncommon Character by Rowan Jacobson. And so I was kind of flipping through it last night because it gives nice little backstories. But it also doesn't have all of the apples because he's a New Englander. And, for example, I picked up some Harrelson apples at the farmer's market this week. And, oh, they're so yummy. They're tart. They're almost Granny Smith-ish, but not quite, little fuller flavor. And they're red. And one thing I tend to do, because we do have quite a few varieties around here that I've seen, aside from the supermarket ones. For example, I think that Berry Patch has Macoon, you know, and this is the season to get them fresh because they're not being stored. Of course, Cortland's are around. Sometimes they're wonderful. The usual classic Macintosh and Northern Spy. These are apples. When I go, like, oh, Fairway often has a lot of apples or whatever, especially local apples and farmers markets. And I kind of look at it's like your opportunity to pick a kind that you've never heard of, you know, and just different taste sensations, and the names are beautiful. And usually, even in the produce department, if you ask someone, they will give you a tasting slice so you know what you're getting. And I, of course, happen to love really crunchy, crispy, tart, juicy, you know, and then you can ask, are these for sauce? Are these for cooking? Are these for eating? Do they store? There's so many qualities. I would just encourage everyone this time of year, try an unfamiliar variety. Now is the time.
Apples are a wonderful thing to celebrate this time of year.
They're everywhere.
Yes, and local food, too. Local food is kind of, 20 years ago, nobody would have even put those two words together, local and food. Food is just food, isn't it? My goodness. And then people started to think about local food and maybe even having a whole local food dinner or a whole local food menu.
I think before it came along, people just thought their food came from around here because it used to.
Right. Or if it didn't, well, that was good too because it gave those truck drivers something to do.
Yeah, and that year-round produce from California.
That was a major miracle.
Absolutely.
But there are some drawbacks to that, and it's lovely to have a strawberry out of season or tomatoes all year. That's real fine. But there's something to celebrate in local foods.
Well, you know, I think our very own Ames Leopold Center did some of the most cutting-edge research on what we now, everybody refers to as food miles. I think they pretty much pioneered that concept and did the math on it. And we're kind of have been in many ways in the sort of epicenter of, well, we're in the middle of the country, so we need to think. And we're a big agricultural state, and basically all we were producing was, and still are, corn and soybeans, which no people eat. And we do have a lot of pork, of course, much of which is processed out of state. And we do also have a lot of eggs. We're big in eggs in the, I think it's the unshelled egg business or something. Liquid eggs, it's called.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, liquid eggs.
Yeah,
oh,
so these are kind of fairly industrial things that don't leave us eating a lot of what's growing around us.
Yes, and so when we want to sit down at the dinner table or gather friends around, maybe we want to celebrate the fact that there's local food available now.
You know, and I think we should give a shout out for Farm to Folk and Marilyn Anderson here. She has been making local foods available and kind of giving the farmers a single one-stop shopping where they bring it in.
A convenient market.
Exactly.
That's Farm to Folk. That's one of the CSAs around here, and it's been a dandy here in Central Iowa.
Google that one.
Farm to Folk. Yeah.
And you can be a member, and then you get an email once a week of what's going to be available, and you put your order in, and then the farmer picks it, and then you pick it up on Tuesdays.
That's a good way to eat. On Saturday, September 28th, there was a gathering at Brookside Park in Ames to celebrate local food and all the good things about the harvest season. It was a beautiful day. The annual Local Foods Potluck was sponsored by Wheatsfield Co-op. Folks usually seem to bring their best to a potluck. We're proud of what our gardens have produced, and for those of us without our own gardens, we're pleased to find more and more healthy food available in stores and from our local farmers. I took my potluck dish and the Donalana Kitchen microphone with me to find out what was cooking at the Local Foods Potluck Picnic. I'm talking to Linda Johnson. She's the manager of Wheatsfield Tree. Why does Wheatsfield do this?
Well, it gives us the opportunity to showcase local foods and to increase our community, you know, get all the people together, the staff, and have an enjoyable night.
Thank you for hosting this.
You're welcome.
Britta Schoberg, and I brought gluten-free pasta salad.
What did we bring?
Oh, we brought vegetables from the garden. We have some cherry tomatoes, some yellow ones and red ones. We have some cucumbers and some carrots.
My name's Kim McDermott, and I brought beets with mustard dressing.
Carrie Chenault.
Andy Kaplan.
And we brought roasted beets and celeriac root with garlic.
My name is Matt Liebman, and I brought a very spicy salad that I picked about 2 hours ago with sorrel, lovage, some newly germinated arugula, and new lettuce.
Tell me your name and what you brought.
Deb Carter, and I brought cucumber salad.
Yay!
Thank you.
We're here at the Wheatsfield Local Food Potluck. Could you give me your name and what you're cooking?
Hi, my name's Tom. I work for the Wheatsfield Deli, and we have some local chicken that we've turned into barbecue chicken, and then we have some vegan, essentially pulled pork sandwiches that we, made out of shredded vegetables.
That's good.
No
that
doubt.
Good. Thank you.
You bet.
Okay, I get close. Okay, give you your name and what you brought.
I'm Susan DeBleek, and I brought a kale salad.
Yay. Thank you.
Sure. Hi, my name's Adam Calder, and I brought some pumpkin snickerdoodle cookies that I made with an Iowa organic pumpkin.
My name is Bronwyn Beattie Hansen, and I am the wine and beer buyer at Wheatsfield, so I was in charge of selecting all the local beers today, and we have a variety of them. We've got some from Exile down in Des Moines, West O, Madhouse, a lot of brands represented in really every style of beer you can imagine.
Hi, I'm Beth Kemp. I brought a Southwest coleslaw, so it's like cabbage, carrots, corn, peppers, lime juice, honey. All local, well, except the limes. And cilantro. Pretty easy, refreshing, goes with everything. Thanks.
I am Sarah Davis, and I brought a potato salad that's mostly made of Onion Creek Farm things.
I'm Helen Colvin, and we brought two whole watermelons about the size of a basketball each, and had cut them up, and also a radish salad that was local radishes out of the Raccoon Forks CSA. Apples were from Deal's Orchard, some yogurt, a little bit of sugar, a little bit of lemon juice.
Could you give your name and what you brought?
Catherine DeLong, and this is Stefan Galens, and we brought a kale salad.
Amazing kale salad.
That also had, we're really proud of this salad. It had beet greens, arugula, chopped up egg, tomatoes, carrots, and then we made roasted pecans that had been roasted with nutritional yeast, so it had sort of a cheesy taste to it, and we didn't get to have any of it, because we got in line too late.
Very good.
This is Kim Corbin. And Wheatsfield has done the local food potluck for 9 years.
I'm Sue Kroll, and I brought scalloped corn from local corn and peppers from my garden.
I'm Kathy Scott, and I brought some cucumbers. It's like a fresh pickle. It's with vinegar and water and salt. And the cucumber, I'm babysitting a neighbor's garden right now while they're on vacation, and they had lots of cucumbers, and that's where they came from.
We can get the audience. Give me your name and what you brought.
My name is Amy, and I brought a salad made with potatoes, tomatoes, and green beans.
Kathy Beeson, I brought deviled eggs and pickled beets. My deviled eggs are all gone, so they must be good. This is a fun time. Yeah, this is good.
I'm Linda Hodges, and I brought applesauce made today from our apples picked today with rhubarb in it, and Laurent made those, not me. And then also I fried some okra in coconut oil and dipped it in a little cornmeal.
This is Tom Russell, and this evening I prepared for the group a delicious meal of pink potatoes grown right here, and then homegrown kale and homegrown onions from our backyard. So potato, kale, and onions, a vegan dish.
This is Greg Bruna, and I brought some pickled jalapenos and some pickled cukes that I had lying around. That might be a year old. Don't tell anyone. But they came from the garden one of these seasons.
But they're even more local.
Yeah, right. They've been here a long time. They're townies.
My name is Crispy Viora, and I brought an apple cobbler, quick apple cobbler. The apple cobbler that I brought is from a Mennonite cookbook called Slow Meals? Was it Simple Meals? And my mom gave it to my wife, and my mom had gotten that cookbook back in 1979, and she took it over to Poland, where she made lots of from-scratch foods. And now we're using that cookbook.
I'm Ruth Wiedemeyer. I brought my kids, and I also brought I made some hummus, and then I brought some cucumber, carrot, jalapenos, parsley, cilantro, and vinaigrette salad. I got the olives for the hummus at Pamel Grocery, and the tahini, of course, and picked up some, got the cucumbers at my CSA. My farmer is Bruce Smith of Iowa Fresh. Love the share this year. Signing up again.
That was a little bit of flavor of what went on at the local foods potluck. That was 2 weekends ago. Put on by Wheatsfield Grocery, local foods potluck has grown and grown over the years. It's always a good time. Like I said, people are always proud of what they bring. There was music, too, at the local foods potluck. Red's Blues Band played live there, and we just ate, and we listened to music, and we had a good time. I want to remind you that you are listening to Local Tasty Radio. This is KHOI FM 89.1. This is good music and good Donalana Kitchen for the heart of Iowa. Thank you. back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. That was a little bit of music by the musician Norman Blake. We'll hear about more music from him later. We're back in the kitchen. We're considering fall and local food. You may be wanting to cook up some of that local food yourself. Donna, what's a good way to do that this time of year?
Well, I'm thinking it's crock pot season. You know, you want something warm, those soups, those stews, those kinds of... And do you use a crock pot a lot, Lana?
Yes, I do. It is a fine ending for an old laying hen. So I like a crock pot. I like a crock pot a lot. I use a crock pot all year. In the summer, I don't want to put that heat into the kitchen, so I just set the crock pot out on the porch. But
oh yeah.
But other than that, this time of year is the time to think about those slow cooked meals.
Well, the crock pots are useful for a lot of things, like make an apple butter.
Oh, I have tried that. That is good.
I think it works dandy. You know, you just make your applesauce however you like, and then I just put it in the crock pot, and I kind of set the lid ajar and keep it on low and go to sleep. And the next morning I get up and I've got apple butter.
It really makes a difference.
It doesn't burn.
It doesn't burn. You don't just stand over the stove. If you had to do it over the stove to get it to the consistency of apple butter, you'd be there a long time.
Well, and you know, crock pots are, you can find them at garage sales. You can pick them up at secondhand stores. I think some considerations for crock pots is, Alana and I agree that the number one thing is to have a removable insert. Those old crock pots that don't kind of come apart so you can wash the insert, they're a little bit annoying.
They are, and I have an old one like that. And by now, the metal outside that the ceramic inside is stuck to is kind of rusty and unsightly. And it's just not as nice as the one with that the ceramic bowl on the inside
right,
can
just
be lifted out of.
Which is also good for serving, too, sometimes if you want to do that. And crock pots are great for taking to potlucks. You can plug them in and it stays warm. Another consideration that I find is a glass lid is nice because the plastic ones end up looking funky after a while.
Oh, right, right.
I think so. And another thing that I like is the warm setting that you can do manually. Now, if you get really fancy, you know, they do have those programmable slow cookers, which I have never used. They do make the item a little bit more expensive. And, you know, since I'm not like a computer genius here, it's like, oh dear, I have to put on my glasses and set this damn thing. So I just go for the manual, you know, slow, warm and medium and high.
Yes, on and off. I can handle that. That's good. Do you, as you are preparing your food to put in the cooker, do you just put in everything cold or do you like cook some things beforehand? Like, for instance, I find that I like to saute onions and maybe brown the meat before I put
them
in.
Yes, you can. Definitely.
Otherwise, well, it's there, but it doesn't have the crispy edges. So you can put things warm in.
Well, of course you can, but you can also go the opposite way. I take like a pork roast or something straight out of the freezer, set it in the crock pot, put on the, you know, stock or just water and a bunch of bay leaves and, you know, you just turn it on and forget about it, basically. So you can do like Lana does where you can cook in steps and add things when you want, or you can just put it in and forget about it.
Ah, good.
I also have a rice cooker, which I use this time of year quite a bit, actually. I found one that's stainless steel that doesn't have what's that stuff that we're not supposed to be it's not Teflon lined.
Oh, good. Good for you.
Yeah, but you do have to put a little bit of oil in it,
mm-hmm.
which is only reasonable. I have to say that I looked in the last Wheatsfield newsletter. I think it was online. And they had taken an article from Real Simple, 6 Brilliant Slow Cooker Breakfasts for Busy Mornings. And it's not that I've done any of these recipes, but it really opened up my eyes to other ways of like you could cook one of the recipes is blueberry, lemon, poppy seed, French toast casserole.
In a crock pot.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So I would recommend going on the Wheatsfield website to look at these things. They make it sound like you can, especially, you know, if you want to have a hot breakfast in your family, you put everything in at night, you go to bed, although they did say 6 or 7 hours. But if you have that warm setting and you want mm-hmm. to sleep 8 hours, mm-hmm. you could do that. But there were, like, breads. One of them suggested putting a loaf pan of bread in the slow cooker.
Oh, now that makes sense. I was wondering how it would not just kind of glue to the side. Okay, all right.
Anyway, that was a whole new concept for me is breakfast slow cookery. So take a look on the Wheatsfield website or else Google Real Foods. Real Simple.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
That's a good start. Yeah. Yes. Breakfast in a crock pot. Well, now that does require you to be a little bit together the night before, but we can do that.
I could assemble it at bedtime and not have to, you know, just wake up, stumble in, drink my coffee, and lift up. Oh, plus, they said in the article, when you're waking up, you wake up, like if you're doing something with cinnamon, you wake up to the smell of a pre-cooked breakfast. That's like having your own bed and breakfast when you get up and your breakfast is made for you. Not a bad concept.
Not a bad concept at all.
We'll have to fool around with that. We could make something with some of those wonderful apples we've been talking about.
That's true. And I will have to dig up. I do have a apple. Well, you have one too. Apple butter recipe. One thing about apple butter in a crock pot. Mine has a calls for some balsamic vinegar in with the apples.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So it kind of, I don't know, it just kind of makes it. I suppose has a good.
Well, I didn't do it this year, but last year I did a bunch of apple butters, and so I cooked down. I don't even remember. Somebody had a plethora of apples, and so that's the time to make it. You know, you just steam them up, run them through the dicer, you know, to get out. It couldn't be easier. That takes out the skins, the pits, and then you've got applesauce. So I didn't add anything to it. I just cooked it down. Oh, I might have added a pinch of salt just to perk it up. But then after it was cooked, I started adding things like I made and I froze them in baggies, right, because I didn't want a can. But I made one that I put calvados in.
Oh.
I made another one with herbs. I think maybe even was basil. It was kind of a takeoff of your basil apple jelly. Of course, you can make the usual. I think I made a 3-cinnamon apple butter with Vietnamese cinnamon, the normal cinnamon, and the Ceylon soft stick cinnamon, and then I dabbed just a little bit of vanilla in it to give it a really rounded flavor. And they were pretty sweet, so I didn't sweeten those at all, but you can always add honey or maple syrup or, you know. So I made my basic recipe because I have that big crock pot that's mm-hmm. – and then I made flavored packages, and it was Christmas presents.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Make it in huge batches and then customize.
Yeah. Yes,
very good.
Now, the other thing we have lots of right now are the pumpkins. The frost is not yet on the pumpkin, but it probably will be soon. So we have lots of pumpkins and squashes, and I love squashes. In fact, when I make my pumpkin pie, and I know we've talked about this, when I make my pumpkin pie at Thanksgiving and in between times, I use a kabocha squash. I pick the one with the densest, creamiest, sweetest flavor.
Oh, those are wonderful. They're kind of – they're smaller squash, dense.
Well, they're smaller than pumpkins.
Yeah, smaller than pumpkins. And aren't they usually bright orange?
Ah, well, there's dark green colored ones.
There
and
is.
Then there's the red kabocha.
Ah.
And I actually tend to favor the dark green ones.
Okay.
And a similar squash is also called a buttercup.
That's right.
Now, I've seen a few. I got one and had it. Actually, all I did this time, I was so happy to see one in the market. I just chopped it in half, scraped the seeds out, rubbed a little olive oil around the interiors, and roasted it in the oven.
Do you roast it open side up or open side down?
Open side up.
Ah, very good.
I like to catch all the juices.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I mean, and it's also less messy in the pan. Why would you roast it down?
I don't know. At one time in my my strange cooking career, I thought they would cook better by keeping the heat in or something.
Oh.
Mushier, get mushier.
That reminds me of another recipe that I love with squash. This one I learned in New Mexico years ago. It was part of the native Spanish culture there. And Don Jose taught me this recipe. You know, you take the squash and you cut the top off like a pumpkin, right? Like you would, like you were going to make a jack-o'-lantern. Scoop all the seeds out, and then you fill it with, I think the traditional recipe that he was using was mostly a red chili sauce, probably with beans in it or maybe ground meat. I tend to fill it with ground meat, some chilies, and not too hot, and a little tomato. But, you know, like a bolognese sauce or something.
Ooh.
But you fill it with the pre-cooked meat sauce or bean sauce or tomato sauce or chili or anything like that. And then you put the cap back on it and you set it on a baking sheet and you roast it in the oven with the stuff inside, right? So when you serve it, you take it out, and it's a lovely thing on a platter. Like sometimes I'll put polenta on the platter and then set the whole squash on top of it, and then you just take the lid off, and people can scoop out the sauce and the squash at the same time.
Oh, so you eat the bowl at the same time.
Yes, and the another way to serve it is to actually just make one time I served it at a big buffet, I made a huge pile of quinoa and split the squashes so that they kind of displayed half open because it was a buffet, so it was easier for people like that. But roasting your squash with something in it, I mean, it could even be a cooked rice dish or something like that. But, it's kind of a double cooking process. But it's a lovely presentation. It's delicious. Think of like what you would put in a roasted pepper stuffing or something would work too. Now, then there's the classic acorn squashes that everybody loves. And did you grow up with acorn squashes?
Not so much. But I remember eating them, yeah.
Well, I have to say it was the only vegetable that my father would eat.
Oh!
And that's because, we always cooked them, you know. And they're kind of like a split acorn is about a one-person portion. And, it was just cut side up, right? Mm-hmm. And let's see, what did Mama do? Something sweet. Must have been maple syrup or honey and butter and the little salt and pepper. Mm-hmm. And everybody loves that. And now we have, what are those little, are they called confetti squashes? And there's a lot of littler...
Delicata
is good for that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And those are also nice stuffed for individual portions.
Right. Those are smaller, little stripey, long little things.
And soups.
Soups. Oh, I love squash soup.
Oh, me too.
It's a good base for a lot of good things, and it's pretty, too.
Yeah, you can use one tends to use the larger squashes because it's a lot easier. Even butternut, which is not my favorite squash, but it's pretty good, and it is it's everywhere, so and it's a good keeper, too. So you can roast it and then scrape it out. Now, some people peel squashes. I find that the most tedious thing in the world, but... roasting them, it's so easy to scoop the flesh out. Or even steaming them in a pot and save the water if you're going to make a soup.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah,
right.
Because that starts off your stock. And they're so easy to flavor with. I made one last week with, what did I put in it? Oh, just a little milk. So it was a creamy, a little milk, a little butter, pureed it in the blender. And then added a little curry powder. How simple. Squash goes great with curry. It also goes really well with any kind of savories, like brown butter sage is really good. Another one that I have done a lot is there's that prepackaged mushroom broth in the aseptic packages.
Oh, yes, in the boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that actually makes a good base for, especially if you want a vegan squash soup. To puree it, get that little bit of mushroom flavor in with the squash, a little salt and pepper, a dash of olive oil, you know, for your vegan friends.
Or for you.
That is
a very
gives
good
it
base.
A little earthy flavor.
Oh, yes.
And we're having a good sweet potato year.
Oh, sweet potatoes, yes.
Last year, we didn't have a good sweet potato year. But this year, so I also made a sweet potato soup this week.
Did you find some sweet potatoes at the farmer's market?
Where did I get my sweet potatoes?
North Grand?
I think I did.
Yes.
There's quite a lot of sweet potatoes around. I found them, at the farmer's markets.
Good.
That's right. I went out to the North Grand Market where there were lots and lots of squash, lots and lots of all kinds of potatoes, and still a good amount of tomatoes. So we're in that kind of overlap season, not for long. But and I saw my first yellowing, oranging tree. Did you notice any on your block? You're out in the country. On my block, I saw the first one turning colors.
Oh, I haven't looked at a tree and said, oh, fall's here yet. It's just kind of turning brownish a little bit. So it must be this week it's going to come upon us.
Well, maybe it was kind of chilly last week.
So
sweet potatoes are good. Squash is great. I'm going to put in some – how do you store your squash and sweet potatoes? Where do you keep them?
Squash and sweet potatoes – don't do all that well in my basement unless I put them kind of next to the stairway where it's a little warmer.
Right. They can't take too much cold.
No, and spread them out. And I'd actually had luck in the corner of the bedroom because we have a cool bedroom. But or another possibility, and I've had luck this way too, is on a rack, slide it underneath the bed. Because I have a cool bedroom.
Oh.
That works okay. But do remember that they're under there. Don't let them go.
I know. Last year I lost some squash because I forgot about them.
You have to check them every now and then.
I like to keep them in my basement because my furnace is down there, so
it doesn't
get too cold.
Yep.
However, I have to protect them from the mice. So I've had all kinds of issues with that. Feeding the mice quite well.
Oh, they're moving in this time of year.
Oh, yeah.
They like our local food, too. I want to remind you, we are listening to KHOI 89.1 FM, local tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. You can contact us. Contact the Donalana Kitchen at khoiradio@gmail.com and let us know about your local food ideas and recipes.
Send us your squash recipes.
Oh, yes. And you can find out more about the radio station in general, khoifm.org. Yes. we're back. That was a great guitar piece played by Norman Blake. The name of that piece was Salty. Salty, yes. Good guitar playing there. Donna's got something also savory and good to talk about.
Oh, yeah. I found a little recipe. I'm always reading foodie things. For sardines, I've been having a little – maybe I need more essential fatty acids or something, but sardines have been calling to me lately. You know, you buy them and you always have them in your pantry, and then you forget to use them. So I'm like stacking up sardine cans here thinking, oh, well, I'm ready for whatever. But I found a recipe that I went, oh, I'm going to make this now. So it's called sardine tartine with currants, pine nuts, sweet and sour onions. Well, tartine, schmartine, it's an open-faced sandwich, you know. So I took a nice thick piece of crusty bread and toasted it up. And I think this came for four portions. I had my neighbors over and we had girls' night at the table. So sardines are in our dwindling species of fish in our poor degraded ocean. Sardines are kind of at the bottom of the feeding chain. So they're plentiful. They're inexpensive for now anyway. This may change in our lifetime. And a good canned sardine packed in olive oil is, you know, if you lived in the Mediterranean, I suppose you'd be making them fresh. They're absolutely fabulous fresh, but we never see them like that in Iowa. So this recipe was fun. You toast up your bread. Well, first, a half an hour before, you slice very thinly a red onion, and then you boil up a little pot of a half cup of white wine vinegar, a little bit of sugar, a little bit of salt, a fresh bay leaf, and some, they said red pepper flakes, but I'm a black pepper fan. So anyway, you heat up this vinegar sugar mixture, and then you pour it over the sliced red onions and currants, and you let that sit just a half an hour.
And currants.
Yes.
Yes,
so good. You got your sweet, sour, salty thing going on. So then the sandwich is basically, you got your crusty bread toasted, and then you slather it with cream fraiche.
Oh, I'm all for slathering.
Oh, yeah. Don't skimp on the cream fraiche. Now, cream fraiche is really the French equivalent, sort of, not quite, but sort of sour cream. Now, if you buy cream fraiche here in Iowa, it's rather pricey, ridiculously pricey, I must say. So what I did was, and I often do this, you can, A, make your own if you want to start the night before by putting a little either live cultured buttermilk or live cultured yogurt in some cream. But what I did, the down and dirty quick way, was I bought some sour cream, a nice organic Kelowna sour cream, and I mixed it with a little bit of my very tart kefir culture so that I made this sour cream a little bit runnier and a little bit tartar. So I just slather that on the bread. That's the good base. So don't put it on like mayonnaise. Put it on thicker than that. And then you want about a half a can of sardines kind of broken up a little bit on top of the cream fraiche.
Do you drain off the olive oil?
Yeah, I kind of picked it out. I didn't put the olive oil. I thought the sour cream was enough fat.
Oh, right. And kind of runny anyway. So, okay.
Yeah, well, the oil I put on the cat food. How's that?
Very good.
You don't waste it. It's really good. So anyway, you put the sardines on the cream fraiche that's on the toast, right? Then you spread the pickled onions over it, and you break up a few leaves of parsley so you get a little bit of green in there. And then you put some lemon zest and a little bit of lemon, not too much. And then they did call for putting toasted pine nuts on top of that. I kind of got spaced out and forgot that part, but that's gilding the lily, I think. So it was really, really good and very simple to make. And it made a lovely, I think we had the girls' night out dinner, so we had the sweet potato curry soup for the first course, the open-faced sardine sandwich with wine, of course. And, and then Lou made a wonderful apple pie.
Ah,
perfect.
What a nice recipe and what a mm-hmm. nice meal. That sounds that. Now, just looking at all the ingredients, it looks like that sandwich is a fuss to make, but
But it's not.
It's a
really
whole dinner,
simple.
And it's wonderful.
Right.
And
the fish right. comes out of a can. Yeah. It's also not very expensive, you know, for a good protein.
And if you're going to do it, do like you did. Invite the neighbors over.
Yes. And they brought wine, too.
Oh, so what would one suggest with a sardine, for a wine to go with a sardine?
Oh, boy, that's, you know, I'm not very good with pairing. I actually had a good red wine that had been gifted to me, and I thought, this is probably a really special bottle, so I shared it with him.
Yeah, see, yeah. share.
Yeah.
Good suggestion, Donna. Well, I have a little bit of news here from the Donna Lana Kitchen Bummer News Department. Here we go. Just something I read off the website, and the UN has designated this as Year of the Soils. Think about what's under our feet. And here is a little bit of news about something that affects our soil, and it has to do with how we grow our food. So you can grow things well or grow things that deplete the soil. And here is a bit of things to think about here. Much of our food is made available to us because we pour a whole lot of fertilizer and inputs into agricultural production. And
Inputs.
Those are chemical inputs. That's what they call them.
They could be manure, but usually they're not.
And these chemical inputs, this fertilizer production and their application is responsible for up to 10% of global greenhouse gas emissions. The International Panel on Climate Change estimates that for every 100 kilograms of nitrogen fertilizer applied to the soil, 1 kilogram ends up in the atmosphere as nitrous oxide, a gas that is 300 times more potent than carbon dioxide as a greenhouse gas. And it's the world's most significant ozone-depleting substance. In 2014, this was equivalent to the average annual emissions of, get this, folks, 72 million cars driven in the United States, about a third of all the cars and trucks that are driving around this fine
country.
And
we live in the middle of that kind of agriculture.
And we live in the middle of it. I got this information. Oh, where else do I get information? Off the internet. It was from Common Dreams website, an article written by Andrea Germanos, and it's called Exxons of Agriculture, Wielding Power to Block Real Climate Solutions. She refers to the chemical industry that supplies agriculture with its inputs as the Exxons of Agriculture. Besides having this information stored away in your head, remember that there are huge lobbying efforts going on to keep this sort of protection going.
Right, because, the sad thing is, actually, carbon sequestration, if you're using more non-chemical methods like organic methods, we actually can take carbon out of the air enough that we could reverse global warming if we were not doing this kind of agriculture.
Yeah, these
inputs. Kind of crazy. Yeah, kind of crazy. Yeah,
these inputs make money for a whole lot of folks, but they make a real problem for the rest of us. So we can do our part by buying judiciously and putting pressure on folks.
Right, buying food from farmers that are not doing that kind of agriculture.
Yeah, the good news is that there is a fix for this problem. A worldwide switch to agroecological practices,
mm-hmm.
healthy organic practices, mm-hmm. can achieve the same yields that we're having now without chemicals. We're getting better at this, folks. We are getting better, and we can do it in a
healthy way.
We
know how to get out of this fix. You know, it's just the old vested interest things. So, consumers have choices. That's the least we can do. It's true. And at the farmers markets, ask your farmer, was it grown organically? Did you use pesticides? What kind of fertilizer are you using? And that will encourage them to move more in those directions, too, and find out more about how to farm organically or sustainably or agroecologically. Ecologically. There we go.
We can do it. We can do it. I know we can. And along that same line, there's a soil conference coming up at Drake University. That's in November.
Oh yeah, this is quite quite interesting.
Quite a thing, yes. Drake University Agricultural Law Center, in cooperation with the Leopold Center, will host a two-day conference to explore soil and water conservation policy. That is on November 19th through the 20th in the Olmsted Center at the Drake University in Des Moines. The conference is called The Past, Present, and Future of Iowa's Soil and Water Conservation Policies, Sustaining Our Iowa Land. For more information, go to www.drakeaglaw.org. DrakeAgLaw.
For all you super food geeks there.
Yeah, find out where this comes from. I don't think we could do too much without the good soil under our feet.
And we're so lucky to have in Iowa. There are other places in the globe that have soil as good as us, but not very many, and no one has any better. There's equivalent soil, I believe, in the Ukraine. I mean, we just have amazing, amazing soil. And we should be taking better care of it rather than sort of mining it.
Let's be careful of what we've got out there. Local food, local concern, local eating. Yes. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Today we've been talking about local food and sweet potatoes and pumpkins. And Donna gave us a dandy sandwich recipe.
Yeah, the sardines weren't local, I'm afraid, but
oh. But it was good because she had her friends.
They were sustainably caught, it said on the box.
So there you go.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Oh, we also visited the local foods potluck that was hosted by Wheatsfield. We had a potluck picnic, and they do that every year. It's a real fun time. You heard the music of Norman Blake. And also at the Wheatsfield Local Foods Potluck Picnic, the band Red's Blues Band was there. And
Red's Blues Band.
Of course. Okay. Red's Band has been playing in different combinations. They're kind of like this background music for Ames, and we're glad to have them. So
local music.
They were there, and we enjoyed them. So we'll hear a bit more music from Red's Blues Band to go out here. You can hear the Donna Lana Kitchen Tuesdays at noon and repeated at 7 p.m. You can stream live by going to khoifm.org or visit the Donna Lana Kitchen webpage and go to our archives. Find all our past shows. Enjoy them again. Make your own local taste of fall and put something in a crock pot. I'm Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas. And I suggest everybody try a new variety of apple this week.
Yes. Thanks to Rick Morrison for excellent engineering. Eat good food. Enjoy life.